Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This is the Game Football Podcast from The Times. Today we'll react to the sacking of Antonio Conte at Spurs. Is it time for a reset at the club? And who should take charge next? We'll also ask if it has thrown away their top four hopes. We'll talk about Harry Kane's future at Spurs, but also his record-breaking achievement for England, becoming their top goal scorer. We'll discuss the start to qualifying for Gareth Southgate's side and the impact of Bukayo Saka and James Maddison. We'll talk about the Republic of Ireland, what they have to do tonight against France, a good start to the campaign for Wales and Scotland, as well as discussing our favourite golden oldies. This is The Game. Hello, I'm Hugh Wisencroft. Welcome to The Game Podcast. It's another trio on a Monday morning. Myself alongside Tony Cascarino and Gregor Robertson, and loads for us to discuss. We'll start by addressing the elephant in the room. You all know the reality of the situation. When my voice is not 100%, what has Woozy been up to? It was a stag do in Berlin this time around. We enjoyed it. Can't wait until the wedding of my good pal Luciano, who I've known since I was about 10 years old. But it's taken its toll on the voice. So, you know.
Can I ask you a question today? Can I ask you a question?
Go ahead, Tony.
Now, if you was a footballer, what footballer would you be? Or who would you be, should I say, to be more precise?
If I was a footballer.
Because you're a bit of a party animal, it seems, from the outside.
No, I mean, I used to like going out, Tony. Things have changed.
Used to? We were in Qatar together. You didn't go to bed till before 3 a.m.
Hold on. Tell the people why. It's because we were recording the Game Podcast every night, Tony. No, I'm not a party animal. If I was a footballer, any footballer, I'd be someone who was a fleeting talent. Let's put it that way. Dele Alli. Someone like that, I think. Yeah, that's probably me. Best summed up. Speaking of which, let's start with Spurs. A man, of course, who's best known for his time at Spurs anyway. But it was big news last night. I know the newspaper guys weren't very happy. Gregor, you're a newspaper man yourself, so...
You are now.
10:30 p.m. statement from Spurs on a Sunday night. I know a lot of people thought maybe they just wanted Harry Kane to get his England duties out the way so he wouldn't have to answer any questions about it. And maybe there is some truth in that. Manager Antonio Conte leaving Tottenham by mutual consent after 16 months in charge. And it all came after this huge outburst. Antonio Conte calling the Spurs players selfish. He really criticised the club's culture and recent history, really, in a remarkable press conference and a couple of interviews as well. After that 3-3 draw against Southampton recently, Tottenham a fourth in the top flight. So this makes this, once again, one of the most strange managerial sackings. But I guess, given the relationship and the way it seemed to be breaking down, we can all understand it. They're also out of all the cup competitions. And Conte's assistant, Christian Stellini, will be head coach for the rest of the season. Huge decision, alongside former midfielder Ryan Mason as his deputy. In that statement, Daniel Levy, the chairman, said, "We have 10 Premier League games remaining. We have a fight on our hands for a place in the Champions League. We all need to pull together. Everyone has to step up to ensure the highest possible finish for our club and amazing loyal supporters." Conte's departure means Spurs, though, are searching for a fourth permanent manager in 4 years since Mauricio Pochettino left in 2019. Was it inevitable? Does this mean that our reaction isn't as stunned as it might otherwise have been after that huge rant, Tony?
No, of course it's not. Of course it was inevitable. How can you do a press conference like you said after the Southampton game and say what you said and then accuse players and many other people of getting their jobs wrong at Spurs and you're going to survive that? To me, it was the most selfish act any manager I've ever known has done, What he did that day was to hang everybody else out to dry. And yes, you can say, well, the structure of the football club, it's not built for success and this needs to happen. I think you need to do that within the house. You know, I just feel you have done the ultimate last throw of the dice, caused as much trouble. I just didn't like it. And yes, look, years of Spursy being Spursy, it's been a out phrase for years. And you know, from Fergie to many others who have accused, you know, Tottenham as a football club, this is nothing new. This is like the cliched, oh, Stoke on a Tuesday night. You know, Spurs have been that for 20, 30 years. But that man, in one day, literally said everything about his club that he's the manager of. You know, I remember this scenario with Roy Keane. Roy Keane hanged out Man United. He put them to the absolute sword. What happened? 24 hours later, he was gone because he went too far. That was what Antonio Conte did for me.
Not a surprise, Gregor.
No, it's not a surprise. Look, the thing that was a surprise was that he took the job in the first place. It was only ever going to work if Spurs changed. Spurs really went for it. They really backed him and said, we're going to move up a level now. That was the only reason that this was ever going to work. Otherwise, we said it when he took the job, it was such a strange union because he has to be challenging, competing for trophies. And even then, he's not happy most of the time. So this was inevitable unless Spurs changed. And they haven't changed. I think, like, although I agree with Tony, a lot of what he said was true. And Spurs, and Daniel Levy in particular now, really have some serious thinking to do. They've failed miserably since Pochettino left, and we spoke about the reasons about still feels like there was a missed opportunity with Pochettino, but it did go stale in the end, and you could see grounds for making a change. But every single decision since then has been a failure. Daniel Levy has failed. He's failed financially by how much it's cost the club in payoffs for one thing, but also emotionally about how the club now feels and how the fans feel about their own club. And now, ultimately, the One Cup final they were being in, they were left with Ryan Mason in the dugout. And now, with 10 games left of the season, after all the investment in players, we can talk about players too, actually. They've failed, largely speaking, in the recruitment. Oh. But now, with 10 games left, they've got a man in charge in Christian Cellini, whose only managerial job was Serie A seaside in 2017. They've failed. So it just felt like the wrong kind of union from the outset, and this ultimately is not that much of a surprise.
If Daniel Levy were here, he may say that he did back Antonio Conte somewhat. I think it's around £236 million of spending. Now, he's only been there for 16 months. That's a considerable amount. So I think it was maybe the gap that they had to close, you know, and the fact that they can't spend big money, huge money on players. Richarlison clearly failed. Son not being at his best this season, that's been a big thing for Spurs. I guess you can blame the manager about it if you like. Again, we spoke about the capitulation that led to the rant. I still think Tottenham are good enough to get through the last 13 minutes against Southampton with a 2-goal lead. And that has to be on the players, and maybe Antonio Conte lost it a little bit. We know he's had, you know, many troubles in his personal life throughout the last year and some very difficult things to go through, but is he not human? Did he not just...
Yeah, none of it's black and white. I mean, you're right. They have, and, you know, he has been back to a certain extent, and he's had issues off the field to deal with. None of it's black and white, but you knew what you were getting with Antonio Conte. Like, you knew what you had to do to keep him half happy, to keep him invested in the job, and they haven't done that. And that's why we've seen what we've seen.
You have to look back at the previous club of Inter Milan as well and ask questions, because he left and there was financial issues at that football club at that particular time. And the reason he didn't go to Spurs straight away was there was no settlement on his contract at Inter. So he was waiting on the severance pay. That's how Nuno got the job in that short space of time. Now, you can ask the question, is it, well, they're only the... And he said it himself, Antonio Conte, that, you know, you've got to spend 70 million on a couple of players every window, and the public club are thinking, well, we can't quite do that. This new stadium has been a huge investment, and it comes at a price because it doesn't make them as strong in the market. I would look at Daniel Levy, and Spurs fans are not happy about his behaviour. Now, he's in a very privileged position where he's in control, and he acts like an accountant, which he is. He is an accountant by trade, and he acts like one. Everything is accountable. I'll tell you a quick little story. You might think this is irrelevant, but it's about these little detailed things sometimes. Ex-players at Spurs, when they built the new stadium, they had about, I think, about 30 ex-players who do the lounges, be there, and they're not paid big money. They're paid just to host the lounges. Mm. They were halved last summer. They halved their work. Now, a club of that stature is halving ex-players, which are not fortunes, Hugh. They get paid a sum, and it's a bit of money, a bit of pocket money for them.
Yeah.
And this is the sort of thing that happens at Tottenham. This club charges fortune for its seats. You know, fans to go and watch. It charges huge money for its drink. They get like 30,000 plus after a game drinking in the stadium. You know, this is...
It is lovely in there, so I can understand why.
It is lovely, but this guy who manages, who runs the club on behalf of Joe Lewis, is an accountant by trade, and he ends up literally... It shows on the field that everything isn't right. How can Antonio Conte come to this club and do what he wants to do, like Gregor has talked about, but also you've chose terrible, and people might go, oh, they're winners. Yeah, they were winners before they got to Tottenham, and everybody's fouled. So he has to take a lot of the brunt of how Tottenham is run as a football club.
Yeah, see, I want to be careful about kind of lambasting Levy and Spurs for not spending absolutely eye-watering sums of money every transfer window. Like, because sustainability is important. So that is one side of it. But it just doesn't tie. It never tied with Jose Mourinho getting the job. It never, ever married with Antonio Conte getting the job. So if you're going to run your football club that way, you need someone that was more like Pochettino.
When was their last bargain? Who was their last bargain transfer?
Well, this is my point. I think the reality is, you know, Tottenham, with the managerial appointments that they made with Mourinho and Conte, you know, they've essentially bought themselves a Ferrari because they've had that much money. You can get a Ferrari, but they can't afford to insure it because, you know what I mean? They haven't got that little bit extra to give. I always think of, I think it was Paul Barber at Brighton talking about, you know, they got a lot of praise for what they've done since they've been in the Premier League. This was maybe 18 months ago I heard him talking. And he was talking about, you know, how have you run the football club to this point? How do you do it? And he basically said, every single position, we've got a list of players that if our current first team player in that position were to be bought, we have a list of players that we think this player is suitable for our style of football, number one. But also, it's very much about what level they're at in their career. How excited would they be to come to Brighton? Mm. You know, would this be a step up for them? How much would they want to be on the pitch and prove to the world, you know, in a Brighton shirt that they've got something to offer a bigger club than us? And the same thing for a manager. So we look at managers who would think, wow, going to Brighton is a big step up for us. We're not going to go and look for a manager who thinks being at Brighton is beneath them.
Doing them a favour.
It's doing them a favour. And that is what Tottenham have done with a couple of managers who are like, well, I've done bigger things than be at Tottenham.
It's like the surroundings and the environment, everything fitted. That's kind of almost tempted them to say, oh, this is a club that could make this next step, but they're not doing
The wages that Brian, they have obviously have a structure within their football club that it's reasonable. It doesn't put the club in debt. They've got a genius in an owner in Tony Bloom. This club functions brilliantly well. Joel Veltman, 800,000 from Ajax. Yeah. I watched him for 4 years or so at Ajax. You know, a really steady Eddie player, never let you down. He has been one of the most underrated players that I've seen in the Premier League for years. He does a solid 7 out of 10. And it goes back to, how many players can you say at Spurs, of all the buys, have been successful? Have been, wow, big thumbs up.
Yeah. Well, it's funny, you picked Veltman there. I mean, Spurs have signed Jed Spence, right back, and Porro. So they spent close to, what, 50-odd, 60 million quid on two right backs, and neither of which, one of which Conte very clearly said he didn't want. And then the next, if they were to play in a back four, I'm not sure he's really suitable. And then the other one is Emerson Royale, who's just not good enough.
Yeah.
So I looked at some of their transfers this morning, like since Paratici came in, since Fabio Paratici came in, and I'd give him, like, I think there was about 16. It's hard to kind of, you know, with loans and whatnot.
Mm. Well, Bazuma's one from Brighton, isn't he? He's another one you're talking about.
I think Rodrigo Bentancur and Kulusevski are clear successes.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I'm not sure.
I still think
Romero could be, with an arm around his shoulder, a bit of coaching, and a bit of kind of.
But I mean, if Antonio Conte, an Italian manager with a defensive style, he bought a player from the Italian league and he can't teach his centre back not to dive in for challenges.
Well,
I'm not sure many managers are going to be able to, because come on, it's rule number one. I mean,
the basics
that he's not doing.
The other thing to say about those two players is that Paratici brought them from his old club, Juventus. He knew them very well, so like it's not like a leap of imagination there.
Yeah.
So again, I will bring that back to Daniel.
Okay, can I just make one quick point, because I think it adds on to what you're talking about with Brighton and everything. Bazuma is an absolute perfect example where he was shone for Brighton, did brilliant. They sell him, they get Caicedo to come in. He continues, and if not, does even better at an incredible young age. And Bazuma has not performed anything like we know he can at Tottenham.
Mm.
It's like it's so obvious. This happens every time with Spurs.
But listen, Alison Rudd, our very own, has written a piece in the Times. Make sure you read it. How confused Spurs culture eats managers for breakfast. And I honestly feel it harks back to what I said on the podcast recently about like the identity of Spurs. So you bring in players. Brighton are bringing in players to fit the style of football that they've got there. So it's no wonder that they're all playing well. They bring in a manager, De Zerbi, none of us saw it coming, who picks up immediately in terms of his style on what Graham Potter does. If anything, it's Potter's style, but he's more aggressive. He goes for it a little bit more. It's taken the club a step further. And by the way, I'm not sure why Brighton became the prototype for what Tottenham need to be, but we're just using it as an example.
We could use Brentford.
We could use a number of clubs who say, right, we haven't got all the money in the world, but how do we, again, the competitive advantage, how do we make a difference? You know, all my mates today, we had a chat about it, saying we can't complain that Spurs haven't given Conte all the money in the world. We want sustainable football. And I said, well, hold on a minute. In my mind, Tottenham should be a club that has a formidable team, that plays good football, that goes into a season with a credible chance of finishing in the top four. And if they end up in the Europa League, in my opinion, like any English club, you should be amongst the favourites to go and win a Europa League. You do not need for that, in my opinion, to spend Manchester City money. You don't need, you know, this idea that kind of you need to have a £50 million player in every position. No, I truly don't think that's true. And by the way, they finished in the top four last season, and they've done it a number of times without spending that much money. But it's about the consistency of the quality of football behind it. You know, you go into a season, Spurs will have patches. Really, without Kane and Son, we're not looking at, you know, and those two players probably, in terms of how they performed over the last few seasons, were above where Tottenham were as a club and could easily have been playing at a higher level. I know Son's, like I say, having a bad season, but we know Kane could be playing for one of the biggest, most successful clubs in the world.
It is a question for you then. So ask why Son has had a bad season. I've always seen him play with a smile on his face. This year's been a season of frustration. Maybe that's Conte as well, because he clashes with lots of people. He'll clash with his own players. And I think that Son wouldn't be a problem in a dressing room, and yet he's played like he's an unhappy player this year.
Can't put my finger on it, obviously. Don't know what's going on behind closed doors, but it's one way of looking at it. And we know Richarlison, obviously a new signing, hasn't performed, no Premier League goals. You know, that would be a worry. And again, the Tottenham squad, for me, is not bad. It's not terrible. It's obviously in the top four of the Premier League right now, which is still a bit of a surprise because we've seen them play pretty badly at times. But I do think if Tottenham want to take a step forward,
Hugh, they got the England number nine, the all-time record goal scorer. They're going to finish. You know, you can't have someone the stature of Kane and be mid-table. You know, you're guaranteed 20, 30 Premier League goals.
No, but I'm not saying. All I'm saying is, if this club had more of an identity, and maybe that goes back to what Spurs were before, I think all of these players perform better.
Yeah. Okay.
Like I just don't see them. I think they've changed managers, and to do so, they've gone for winning trophies. They've gone for, at all costs, bringing a Mourinho. Doesn't fit our fans. Used to be a Chelsea manager. Doesn't play free-flowing football, but he might win us a trophy. And we'll forget the fact that his personality just doesn't fit with our group of players, doesn't fit with our football club. They brought in an incredibly defensive manager in Nuno Espirito Santo, which made no sense to a lot of people. And now they've brought in Antonio Conte, again, an abrasive manager with a defensive style, all in the hope of winning a trophy. It's like other clubs would not go against what they want their football club to be. Managers come and go, players come and go. You need that underlying. Yeah. Like there are so many times where you know, as a Manchester United fan, they were doing well under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, for example, and they finished second in the league. And people were like, well, we're a counter-attack team. That's not Man United. We need to dominate teams. We're not going to win the Champions League. We're not going to win the Premier League unless we do that. And others were going, but you came second. Man United fans were going, but that's not our... And when we were linked with Conte, a lot of Manchester United fans were saying, well, he doesn't fit our culture in terms of his character. Loads of Man United fans hate Jose Mourinho for the same reason. Personality. It's like, I get it. We can have arguments about football. We can debate, you know, within all of that. I'm not saying those opinions are necessarily right. But what I'm saying is, those fans had an idea in their mind over what their football club is, its identity, its culture. And Tottenham fans, who were in love with the club under Pochettino because they felt they had that football and they felt they had a manager who loved them, they've lost all of that in the space of three and a bit years. For me, that's on that is more on Levy than the failures in terms of the transfers.
The guy that sacked Jose Mourinho the week before the League Cup final.
Yeah.
I mean, that in itself is the most bonkers decision, I think. And I could think, say, owner. He's not the owner, but, you know, he's certainly the lead man at Spurs who makes all the big decisions.
I mean, like you're referencing, that Spurs were once the team that you pointed at and looked and said, you know, their recruitment policy is about buying young players with potential. Yeah. And it brought them to a certain point. All the time in the background, the new stadium was being built at a huge cost. So taking this next step, or the desire to take what they feel is the next step, has been a failure, a massive failure. And so they now need to reassess whether that's a step that they can afford to take. Because
is it time to restart, basically?
Okay, it's a time to decide. They could continue ploughing money in, but they need to do it better. It's not easy. We keep referencing these clubs, but we're referencing them and they're rare. Like, not everyone has the data that Brentford and Brighton do clearly, and kind of not many clubs do this very successfully. So that's the first thing to say. But they need to decide how they're going to do it. They need to decide whether they go back to something similar to what there's still signs that Levy kind of has that instinctively within him. He wants to buy assets that are going to appreciate in value, like Jed Spence. Oh. He's saying, no, I think we should still have the odd player like that. So you can combine it, but they need to do it better, ultimately, because every decision since Pochettino left, I think, every major decision has been a failure.
And if you think of decision-making, which I sometimes laugh because I think it's extraordinary how Tottenham have done some stuff, and it's how did Dele Alli fall off a cliff? Now, you could say, well, that's down to him and his personal life. How was he allowed to get in that position? How did Harry Winks leave the football club? How did Davinson Sanchez not improve as a centre-half? You know, all his years there, I never saw an improvement in Davinson Sanchez. They spent £40 million on a young potential centre-half. And it's like a common theme, Groundhog Day, all the time on loads of different positions in the team.
There's an interesting thing about, you know, I know I mentioned the restart a few moments ago. There are a number of players on loan from Spurs at the moment who could, in my opinion, strengthen this squad. Brian Hill, again, he's a player we saw flashes of one or two games, and suddenly you're like, well, he's a player that probably should have been involved.
Under a different manager, you would imagine, might flourish.
And Ndombele, for me, I've been highly critical of him. He has got something, clearly, as a footballer, but in the Premier League, for me, it doesn't click. In terms of his work rate in particular, they brought this brilliant young fullback, Destiny Udoji, and just immediately put him back out on loan. So maybe they thought he wasn't going to play left wing back. Could have been good, give him an opportunity. Lo Celso's out on loan. Reguilon's out on loan at the moment. Jed Spence, not involved much. Harry Winks as well. Jed Spence obviously out in France at the moment. All of these players could be helping the squad, in my opinion, at the moment. Listen, not in terms of... When I say helping this squad, what I mean is in terms of the bench.
Yeah.
You know, again, and I say all, not all. Some of those players could certainly help the quality of the squad overall. So when you have those players who go through a bit of a patch, particularly the front three, Lucas Moura's out. You know, Brian Hill should be involved at this point in time. He just should, not because I think he's a brilliant player who's going to start scoring every week, but because you're getting to the point where you've got no bodies. I mean, he's better than no one, or at least he should be. Lo Celso... Maybe, again, he's had his opportunity, but those players, a lot of them are either going to be failures because they've recently been bought and not given an opportunity, or they already are failures, plus the ones still in the Tottenham squad. That's not on Levy, in my opinion. I don't think we expect him to choose players. That's on Paratici and who went before him, in my opinion. Yeah, but, and that's why I think this clambering for Poch is a bit odd, because I think they bought a lot of failures in terms of signings when he was the manager as well. So, you know, speaking of Mauricio Pochettino, a lot of people think he should be the next permanent manager. Julian Nagelsmann's just left Bayern Munich. He's been spoken about. Generally, I think the decision, you mentioned it, Gregor, to put Christian Stellini in until the end of the season is a massive one in itself, because really it puts your top four hopes up in the air.
It's funny, I can see it from both sides. I see, like, as I say, he has no experience as a number one. You would imagine he'll probably employ pretty much the same tactics that Conte has, which the fans haven't exactly enjoyed. But when your alternative as a kind of continuity or the fill-in is Ryan Mason, I think it's a good choice.
Make an immediate appointment. Luis Enrique is available. Nagelsmann's available.
Well, it might be worth... I mean, Nagelsmann is interesting, but it might be worth taking some stock and getting through to the summer. I don't think it's the worst decision. Like, we saw decent performances, a bit of an uplift when he stepped in when Conte was ill. I think it could be an okay decision.
I think you've got to go Maverick. You've got to go really show for the first time that you're actually thinking outside the box on an appointment, because they only have to look out at their neighbours and see what they did when they got Arteta in. And yes, they suffered, but you made a call that you believed in a guy that one day would turn the fortunes round of a football club. Tottenham is in a malaise that I don't see any way of getting out of at the moment, unless they... We talked about fourth place there. Who would have expected Chelsea and Liverpool to have the seasons they've had?
Yeah.
You know, in some ways, it's a bit of a default position because they're in fourth. You know, Newcastle could snatch it off them. Their season hasn't been good, and it's had some incredible lows. And we might go, oh, well, they beat Man City, you know, terrific on that. There's very few highs was during this season. And I think the club have to be really brave on the type of appointment they make and think outside the box, not just, you know, Nagelsmann. When you said Luis Enrique, I'm like, Spain? Me and you, we suffered Spain in the World Cup together.
I still think he's a good coach, though.
Well, he may be, but unless he's going to change the way he wants to play football, they wanted to pay a million. They thought a million passes was a goal because they never, ever tried to play in an adventurous way. It was for a Barcelona ex-player, it didn't resemble anything of what Barcelona did.
Mm.
So that's why I've been, well, unless he's had a complete change of heart and the way he wants to play football, I wouldn't see that, because all I saw was a team that just passed the ball out the back to everybody. Everyone had a touch before they had to score a goal.
Well, De Zerbi will be linked, clearly.
Yeah.
And I think Postecoglou at Celtic will be linked to every Premier League job now, really. I think he's done a great job. So
yes,
there's some interesting possibilities there, but there's a question about whether they'd come.
Nah, it's a huge job.
It's a huge job.
It's a huge job, but you see what difficulties there are involved with it as well. So it's...
Gregor. What would De Zerbi get him? What would you think his roundabout ballpark figure of wages would be?
I'm not playing that game.
If we go 5 million. Well, Conte's been paid 15 a season. You know, if De Zerbi was offered the job, he's certainly going to go there. And there'll be... You talk about other managers. Their wages would be trebled, quadrupled. They would probably go.
Every manager thinks they're going to do a good job as well. Remember that, you know, and I think, you know, his wages would be probably at least times five what they are at Brighton at the moment. Okay, so not to mention, listen, if you do a bad job and you get sacked, you're going to get quite a lump sum to leave the club.
He's lost
as well.
His job about five or six times already, hasn't he, Zerbi? You know, I'm not saying that, you know, people foul, and I'm up for, if you foul, you get given other opportunities, because you have to experience failure of somebody.
Managers know as well now, don't they? Look, you go through a bad 10-game spell and you can lose your job, so you've got to take the opportunities when they're there, I think. But it would surprise me if Tottenham had the forethought to appoint a manager like De Zerbi, honestly.
And would they be willing to spend the money it would cost to get him out?
I did a piece probably 3 weeks ago, 4 months ago, and I said there's one outstanding candidate, and for me it was Vincent Kompany. Because how he managed a club that was literally on the floor, changed a style of play that was extraordinary, what they were and what they've become. And people could go, well, you know, make it... He was part of an incredible winning mentality at Manchester City, the same as Arteta was. If I was a Tottenham fan, he would excite me, because it's something so maverick and so different, and he's a leader. One thing Vincent Kompany's always shown, not only on the field but off it, he's shown his ability to be a leader, make big calls. Do you know, years ago, I said this before, you know, like Stoke used to be on the Tuesday night? Well, in the 80s, when I first started playing football, it was Burnley on the Tuesday night. It was never Stoke. It was Burnley. So he's gone to this unfashionable club, you know, in Lancashire, and completely... You speak to any Burnley fan about the way they play. And yes, they lost 6-0 in the FA Cup. It's irrelevant. He's done an amazing job at that football club that I think someone like Tottenham should be thinking about.
Well, yes, it's a valid show. It's a big step up from the Championship to a club that's trying to be in the top four and challenge for silverware. But I kind of agree. I like... Some imagination is no bad thing when you've gone when your past three managers have been Jose Mourinho, Nuno, which was incredible, and Conte.
Former Spurs midfielder Michael Carrick doing pretty well in the Championship as well with Middlesbrough, playing a great style of football. We'll see. Just two final questions on Spurs. Firstly, whether you think they will finish in the top four, given how the season's gone. I know you said who might catch them, but genuinely from here on out, how do you think they will do? But also, we're going to talk about him in a moment, Harry Kane. Is this definitely now, if he were to be here, he'd probably share, I think, the opinions that we have about Tottenham. Obviously he knows them more intricately, but ultimately there have been big failures in this football club. Will this mean that he wants to leave this summer? Got 1 year left on his deal.
I just think it's inevitable that his loyalty is unquestioned about what he's did at Spurs and how long he's stayed. I mean, he looks at his club now. What does he think? You know, he's the leading all-time goal scorer of England. He comes back and he's thinking, we've now got a temporary manager to the end of the season. You know, where is this club going? And to me, I think Harry's got to make a brave call, and that call is leaving the club that he's given everything for.
I wouldn't be surprised if he wants to go, but there's a different question about how Spurs are willing to let him go. There was Gary Jacob wrote a piece last week, I think it was, saying that they want £100 million up front, so they're not instalments either. And not many clubs are going to do that for someone who's... Will he be 30 then?
He's 29 now,
with 1 year left on the
team. Do you know it's going to be?
So I think the hardest bit will be Spurs, how Spurs allow him to leave if he wants to leave, and it might be that he has to run down his contract.
This is why I think they need to get round the table, all of the key stakeholders, and decide, you know, is this restart time? Where are we as a football club? Let's get the maximum that we can for Kane, reinvest it. You know, let's start again, basically, and get that message to the fans and say, look, we expect to be a top six team. Definitely what we're going for. We're not here saying we're going to be a mid-table team. But in terms of our, like I've said previously, in terms of our academy, in terms of every team at our football club, we're going to make a decision on how we want to play. We're going to get in the coaches that we think are appropriate. We're going to get in the players that we think are appropriate. And that process may take 2 or 3 years.
I think it'll be another divorce case. It'll be another one where I feel Kane will end up falling out with Daniel Levy, because he'll end up doing it, like I said at the very start, like an accountant. There'll be no sentiment in any shape or form towards Harry Kane and what he's achieved. It will be cut and dry. We get the most we can. And I think Kane will eventually... I think it'll be a fallout between them.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, I expect if they don't... If they put something that is kind of ridiculous on him, he will, with 1 year left, I think, forgo any kind of loyalty bonuses left and put in a transfer request and be very public about it. And I think once the Tottenham fans,
I think they'll back him.
Will back him. I think they will back him. And in that point, I think Daniel Levy will be left in a very difficult position.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Okay, let's talk about Harry Kane, what he's doing in an England shirt next, because since we last spoke, he's become a record breaker on the international stage, England's all-time record goal scorer. He scored a penalty at Declan Rice, the other goal in the game, as England beat Italy 2-1 in Naples, winning away against Italy for the first time since 1961. They got their Euro 2024 qualifying campaign off to a winning start. They then backed that up yesterday with a 2-0 win over Ukraine at Wembley. Kane adding a 55th goal for his country to move 2 ahead of Wayne Rooney. Tony, what is the size of that achievement from Harry Kane?
Well, it's extraordinary for a player that was deemed not good enough at 18, and literally Pochettino had to hang his hat on this player and say, this lad's going to make it, he's going to be good enough. And many Tottenham fans didn't think he would be. Do you know what I love about Harry Kane? Is that his willingness to improve and be a great pro in every aspect of his career. It feels like he's just wanted to get better and better, and whatever is happening on the outside, he's kept distance. Even like he's doing a bit now with the club, even though I know he's not the captain of the club, but he is a statesman for the club, he still keeps his distance. And some might be critical of that, saying maybe he could push more pressure on Tottenham as a club. But his pressure has always been relieved by goals, desire, hunger, and being so much more than just one player. You know, Jimmy Greaves, I was lucky enough to see the end of his career, and Jimmy Greaves was quite a typical centre forward of being quite selfish, getting goals and his numbers. Where I feel like Harry's been way more of a complete player, as in he will be selfless in his style, create. If there's a better option, he will try and feed the player that's in that better position. And it's pretty extraordinary because he's not blessed with great pace. You know, he's a strong runner, but he's not eye-catchingly quick.
Mm.
You know, he's very good in the air and aggressive in the air. But his finishing is always one touch when it's on. But boy, when he knows he needs to take a touch, he will. His decision-making has been brilliant all his career. And I think you should always look at mentalities of players, because I think there's times when you can think players are great and look at them, and then suddenly you work with them, and I've worked with a few, and Gregor will probably say the same thing. You come away and you go, tell you what, he's got the fortitude of what a mentality. And that will be his success. And I think Harry ticks all of them boxes.
Yeah, I think he's a lesson for a lot of players, Harry Kane, because we saw the loans that he had at a number of clubs, and it didn't look like it was getting going. Norwich, Leicester, Leighton Orient, Millwall, you know, this is a young player who'd been out, and ultimately, when you looked at his game, you looked at it two or three seasons after he first got into the Tottenham team, you were like, the difference, the work rate that must have gone in. I remember the quality in his shooting on his left foot, the technique, free kicks. You know, you looked at it and went, well, this kid has worked on everything. I think for some players, a bit like Dimitar Berbatov, Harry Kane was never blessed with that sixth or seventh gear in terms of speed, which meant he always took an extra second to think about the situation, which actually, I think, helped the decision-making. Now, Berbatov was a genius at times as well, but I think if he could have just run away from players, he would. The point is he couldn't, so he had to do something different. And Harry Kane, just that extra second, that moment to think, you know, is the thing that I think has taken him into that extra class of player. He's superb, and yeah, I think it comes down to work rate.
It is his all-round game, though. I've watched that first half in particular, and some of his hold-up play, some of the way, you know, way that he kind of positions his body to get in between the defender and ball and kind of turns in all in one movement. There was a break in the first half where I think it was involving Grealish and I can't remember who the other player was, and it was like everything was on the very outer margins of what was possible, what they were capable of, like, you know, stretching to bring it under control, but his touch was perfect. Playing the pass into Grealish, like into his path, was perfect. It was always like the margins were so fine, and I think it's his all around game that's most impressive. The goals are like extraordinary, but I watch games and there are moments where I kind of go, he's incredible,
yeah.
And it's not actually usually his finish.
No,
like that's become kind of, you know, you take it for granted now. Yeah. It's the things he does in the build up play, like in fact in the Ukraine game when he got the ball, he switched out. Like that was just like an amazing piece of number 10 play, and then he was in the box to finish it. But the bit before was the bit that I went, wow.
Yeah.
And that's what makes him, when you look around European football, world football, like Lewandowski at his peak, yeah, you think they're similar, there's someone who's maybe got a little bit more explosive power and stuff. But beyond that, as an all-round front man, there's no one comes
Benzema
close.
And, you know,
they're different.
Yeah, they're different, but they have the qualities of, well, certainly Benzema, I saw a 17-year-old at Lyon and remember thinking, no chance. I didn't think he would make it because he had so much rawness about his game, and he was a bit of a party animal off the field. But the point I wanted to make is, think of great teenagers we knew were going to make it. We knew Wayne Rooney was going to make it as a star at 17. We knew Ryan Giggs would have made it as a star as a kid. Then you can think of someone like Joe Cole, Ronaldo, Lionel Messi. We all knew these were going to be incredible players. No one could say that. No one could say about Harry Kane, I knew at 17, 18 he was going to be a great player.
I tweeted, for some reason I still got stick for this, but I congratulated Harry Kane on Twitter, but I quote tweeted a tweet that I made as he came on for his debut, where I said, here he comes, the new Francis Jeffers. Remember this day. Remember this day. It will be a quiz question in the future, right? And obviously he scored 79 seconds into his debut. So it's literally just after I pressed send on that tweet. But again, I didn't see it coming. And everyone was, you know, I kind of got stick for it as if I was meant to be able to see into the future. You know, Francis Jeffers was a pretty highly rated kid as well. That's all I'm going to say, you know. But look, I think that for me personally, just underlines that, you know, I didn't see a lot as a youngster from Harry
Kane. Well, that's
Kane.
What makes it so great, Hugh.
Yeah, I agree.
We all would have said the same thing. I saw him at Millwall. I watched him as a kid there. If you'd have said to me, that lad there is going to be the all-time goal scorer of England, I would have gone and put him in the asylum, that guy.
The thing is, I love it. I love Gareth Bale's story as well, because I just think that, you know, there's a lot of us, you know, we gravitate towards an incredible 16, 17, 18-year-old player who's come through. And we think about, you know, and I'll talk about him in a second, the likes of Wayne Rooney. You know, we see these players, we talk about Pedri now, we think, oh, he's going to be like Xavi, he's going to be like Iniesta, got this huge future. And it's the, you know, there's players at 21, 22, 23 have transformed their careers and not just gone from being a player who was on the fringe of a squad to being a solid, you know, every week 7 out of 10 player. That's, for me, that's still making a great leap. But the fact that you can go from being a player who's not really in the squad, on the fringes, not really knowing where your career's going to go, are you going to end up in a League One team, you know, to being the greatest goal scorer for England ever, or a 5-time Champions League winner that people are saying, is he the greatest British player of all time, in the case of Gareth Bale? Mm. That is remarkable. No player should give up on doing that. You just got to get out on the training pitch, give it absolutely everything, and never, you know, never let your head drop, if you like, because, you know, there are stories that prove that you can do it too. So I think Harry Kane illustrates that for me. Some people were talking about him being England's greatest ever player. I'm speaking to a Scot and a former Republic of Ireland international, but does he fit into that category?
Well, it's not finished business, is it, Q? You know, if he was to go on and get 85, 90, maybe even 100 goals and win Premier League or win the Champions League and add all this into the equation, you could easily make that argument with Harry. For me, he has got the one asset that doesn't affect him is what affected Michael Owen and quick forwards. He doesn't have the pace to worry about getting to 33, 34, and that's his biggest attribute. He's got all other stuff that makes him play to a later age. You know, and that to me is a big thing that is in Harry's favour. Because there's many strikers who rely and they get to 29, 30 and they lose half a yard or yard, that's their career richly going on the downward spiral.
It's interesting because, you know, Wayne Rooney was coming towards the end of his talent at this age now.
Yeah.
And it's because of, and I know it's a weird thing to say, but Rooney was in the team when he was 16 years old. And Kane took a while into his 20s to be an established first-team player, and that will, I think, give him more longevity as well.
Sometimes it's your kind of building stuff as well. Yeah. I mean, like, Rooney was a bulldog, wasn't he? Yeah. and Kane, you know, again, harking back to his early days, you know, see pictures of him looking like he's got a bit of puppy fat and whatnot. And now he's clearly worked so hard as well about being the best athlete he can possibly be. He's not, you know, he's also had a few pretty serious injuries, ankle injuries and whatnot, and he seems to have found a way to stay fit. So whether he's going to be the best, I mean, in my lifetime, like, you think about Alan Shearer, and I think he offers more all round than Alan Shearer did. Alan Shearer was more explosive in his finishing, maybe, but
yeah,
like,
a bit more dynamic.
But I mean, he's scored more goals, and he's I think he's going to have just as much longevity. So he absolutely is in that conversation.
Well, I think it's amazing from Kane. Went on to score again against Ukraine. So let's quickly talk about England's start to qualifying. 2 wins out of 2. Sensational, really. I mean, the start to the game against Italy, absolutely fantastic. Yeah, there were a little bit of wobbles in the second half, but I think they you know, England are a very solid team. They showed that. They started with 2 holding midfielders. I guess that was the big tactical surprise, if you like, that both Calvin Phillips, who hasn't played much football, and Declan Rice started. Rice was fantastic. Bukayo Saka was great in both matches. Ukraine, he was absolutely fantastic, scored a brilliant goal after Kane had scored the opener. But I think you'd have to say it couldn't have gone much better in terms of the start of England's campaign.
I think in that first half an hour against Italy was like up there with the best England performances I've seen. I thought they were outstanding. Under Southgate, they were really dynamic. They were in Italy's face. And Italy actually were pressing like England with some real intensity as well, and they managed to play play around them, play through them quite well. So it's both sides of the game I was impressed with. Bellingham is just like a force of nature. Yeah. There's moments, little moments again, like, again, when you're watching the game and just kind of you go, wow, like, it sounds like nothing, but he, you know, he's closing someone down and he doesn't quite make it before they play the pass off. He just shoves them in the back. He's like, just leaves a bit on them. This 19-year-old kid just like, have that. Like, he just, he's so all action and so kind of in your face. He's brilliant.
When
and
he was driving forward from midfield, I was like, oh my God, I love this.
Yeah.
I love this because everyone's just going, who's he going to pass to? He's got options in front of him. And the big thing is, he's kind of going, if I want to dribble past you and blast through this as well, I could do that too. There was a time where he just had a shot, forced to save early on. And I thought, one of our other midfielders probably checks back, looks for the short pass. He just thought, 30 yards, I've had a bit of a run up to it, I'll smash it. You know, and it was just like, there's a bit of a freedom there, but there's also the kind of arrogance and aggression that goes
aggression,
with it.
Aggression, definitely. Yeah.
And I kind of loved that.
I love watching it.
You felt, watching the game, obviously watching the Ukraine game, I felt that the Henderson, Bellingham, Rice had huge presence, great ability to win the ball back, and when they drove forward, they all felt like they were comfortable with each other, the three of them. And, I mean, Bellingham's, like you said, a bit of a force on nature and an amazing mentality. You can see that. Anyone who goes to Borussia Dortmund or Germany at 17, well, you're very... I talked about this over the weekend, about going to a foreign dressing room and you can't speak the lingo and you arrive and you're just there. You feel vulnerable. He's gone there as a 17-year-old kid. I went to Marseille at 31, okay, and felt that. I remember thinking, you're not quite sure what's being said. You know, training's a bit tricky. You're trying to get an understanding. Okay, most people can speak. In my time, a number of players could speak a certain amount of English that I could have a conversation with. But he's gone to Germany and has grown. We just spoke the first section about Tottenham, about how many players have not grown at a football club. And there he has at Dortmund, and whoever gets him in his next move at 19 or whatever happens this summer is going to get a player with amazing mentality. Apart from all his ability, I think you can look at him and think, there's never a 100% guarantee on a transfer, but he looks like, to me, as good as any.
I loved his interview with Channel 4 after the game when they asked him about the future England captaincy. And he kind of went, he didn't say it explicitly, but it was like, well, yeah, I will be England captain one day. So in the meantime, I'm just sort of learning whatever I can, picking stuff up. And he spoke about the sort of captain and vice captain and went, and the few lads beneath that. And it was like, once I've blasted them out of the way, you know.
I love that in the World Cup too, when he said about when Henderson scored, and he's like, he came out after, he's like, people need to put more respect on his name.
Yeah.
You know, that's, he's not, you know, he's pretty remarkable. Like, the England, again, I just come away from watching these two games thinking England, there's the same things we said before the World Cup. They are, although it's gone on a notch because of Saka and because of Bellingham, like, it's continued sort of growth. They are in the conversation for any major tournament now.
Yeah.
Absolutely, without doubt. The only question is who plays alongside John Stones.
Yeah.
At the back.
I think you're right.
The mistake for, like, I did a little bit analysis for a piece on Saturday about, I think in the last seven, this was before the Ukraine game, in the last seven games, England had conceded 8 goals and Harry Maguire had basically been culpable for half of them. And again, his problem is, like, people make mistakes. Like, he came he's got to carry the ball out of defence. The passing lane was kind of closed off to Jack Grealish. The pass was never on. He tried to play it anyway. People make mistakes. It's what he does after he makes a mistake now, because his mindset is not right. He's not confident.
Yeah.
He panics and he lunges in. It's like, it brought to mind the red card he got against Denmark in 2020, where he took a big heavy touch, and that was just after all the stuff had gone on in Greece. And he got a second yellow card within half an hour and he was off. It's like, he makes a mistake and he's not got the composure to just get back in and make sure that he's on front. And so he left a wide open goal. Look, other than that, he did okay and he was fine.
Yeah.
But these are the moments. These are the little fine margins. You'll think of the Giroud header for France. Like, you were out the World Cup because of that.
I didn't like his answer when he was, you know, he was basically asked about, I've got nothing to prove at this level. I've got over 50 caps.
Well, you've always got something to prove.
That's my point. He goes, I've got over 50 caps. I've capped in Manchester United for the last few years. And I thought, that's a real lack of self-awareness. You know, we all can see, and you should be aware, you haven't played that well. We're not saying that you need to prove if you were ever able of playing at this level you once were. The point is, are you still able to do it? Which means you do need to prove yourself, because we're not seeing you play club football. We're not seeing you do anything special in that arena. It's, you know, a lot of people are even saying, why is he in the squad? So the idea that you think you don't have to prove yourself at the level, I find that lack of self-awareness to be a negative. Because actually he should be saying, look, great.
You can be 37, Hugh, and you're still having to prove yourself. Because at that age, people will say you're on the road, slippery road, and your career is ending. You're still... Luka Modric would have had that question thrown at him, and he's never had anything to prove.
Ronaldo, Cristiano Ronaldo scored twice the other night, and a lot of people in Portugal were saying it's time to move on after the World Cup.
Yeah.
He should retire from international football. You know, he's still got to prove to those people that he deserves to be out there while he's playing in Saudi Arabia and he's not playing in a major European team, you know. So I kind of found that lack of self-awareness there. I just think, look... If he's at his best, he probably still makes England's best 11, particularly what he's done in an England shirt. But is he at his best at the moment?
Well, as a young lad, when you're coming through, you've got to prove to be good enough to be in the first team. And then when you're at the end of your career, you've got to prove you're good enough to still be in that team. You know, and you can't have more than two bad games, really, when you get to 35, 36, 37. Now, I think Harry got that wrong. I think you're spot on about... You know, sport in general, you're always, whether you're a tennis player, whether you're a golfer, footballer, you're always having to prove you're still good enough.
We're talking about very fine margins, and he's been one of Southgate's, you know, most reliable performers in three major tournaments. So he's, to some extent, you know, he has a good body of evidence to suggest that he deserves to still have a chance to be in this England team despite what's going on. But that was the wrong kind of tone to strike. And as I say, when you look back at the goals they've conceded recently, a lot of them have kind of... The Iran goal as well is another one I cited, where the first... They were 4-0 up. I mean, people never really highlighted it much because they were 4-0 up, but he stepped out and Taremi ran in behind him. It was a great little through ball through Declan Rice's legs, but it was another one where he kind of, like, it was... There was no composure there. It was not... He often steps out, in fact, to leave a space in behind. That's
his Achilles heel.
He needs to be calmer in those kind of moments, those clutch moments.
I'm so glad I'm not in this era. Are you, Gregor, where you can literally, every mistake you do is highlighted, scrutinised. I love playing in my era.
A couple of players I wanted to talk to you about in an attacking sense for England very quickly. As I mentioned earlier, Bukayo Saka impressing over the two games. Is he England's key player at the moment?
If you was to say, from the Premier League, who is the most valuable player, would you say Saka?
To their individual team?
As a transfer fee, what would you price Saka in? Now, you might go, well, Haaland will probably be the number one spot in world football because of his age as well. But I'll tell you what, you and I have to go some, because I've seen a level of consistency in Saka. I've seen clubs actually adopt the attitude of doubling up on him. And it's not as if he had a right back that keeps overlapping him. You know, Kyle Walker was as conservative as he's ever been as a fullback at the weekend against Ukraine. But he hasn't got fullbacks overlapping him all the time. He ends up going inside, he goes outside. And I think it's a testament to how good and how consistent he's been.
He's combined really well with Ben White, actually, throughout the season for Arsenal at club level. But you're absolutely right. Like, he doesn't often need that, because you give him the ball. Arsenal often create... You know, find ways of getting him and Martinelli on the ball by almost like dragging other people out of position, you know, threatening the space in between the fullback and the centre half so that it creates space for him. Why? So they find really good ways of getting him 1-1. But when he gets 1v1, he teases, he taunts defenders, he takes the touch, and he cuts back, and then he cuts back down the line again. It's like he constantly manipulates them, and then he opens a yard, and he's always on the money with his delivery. Like, this cross for Kane was just superb. Like, the defender. Horrible defending that. You're trying to help it on without sticking it in your
net. Do you know what
that
ball's called? That ball? It's the Glenn Hoddle ball.
Okay.
Well, the one where the defender thinks he's going to read it away and then realise, I cut this over my head. He does that type of ball.
Yeah.
Which we used to call the Glenn Hoddle ball, because he'd done that regularly in training. He used to annoy the hell out of everybody. But
and his finish was just sublime. Yeah, great goal. Just that effortless way where he kind of whipped it.
I tell
it into
you
the
what,
corner.
Watch the goal again. It's not just the finish. He controls the ball, but as he does it, he moves his body in a way that he totally bamboozles the defender, because he looks like he's going to have a touch, maybe 2 yards to the left-hand side, and allows it to drift across. to his other foot, has the touch and moves away and able to create the space to whip it in. Fantastic goal. By the way, he hasn't signed his new deal yet, Saka. His contract's up at the end of the season. He'll stay at Arsenal.
Yes.
But if his agent doesn't get him at least 350 grand a week, I'm not
Mesut Ozil's coach contract.
I'm sorry, he should be sacked on the spot because he is the future of that football club and he's playing as well as anyone else in the league pretty much right now. He deserves it. I'm just going to put it out there, right? Talk it into...
Are you his agent?
Speak it into existence. I'm not his agent, but it's part of me that thinks...
I'd like to be.
No, it's part of me that thinks... Why are you staying at Arsenal? Now, Arsenal are playing...
Hold on a minute.
No, I'm saying there's loads of good reasons to stay at Arsenal.
There are
loads of good reasons to stay at Arsenal. They're about to win the Premier League. If you win the Premier League, what more are you going to achieve in an Arsenal shirt? I'm just...
No. Like you've missed this is an important point here. This is what you've just missed. You've got to be very careful as a player. You're playing the best football under a guy that gives you... You know, has improved you. Do you want to stay with a guy that keeps improving you? Or would you go, I'll take the money elsewhere, go for this big move, and suddenly my football's not as good? Stay with a guy that keeps improving you.
If it's Guardiola and City...
That's part of his joy, too. He looks so happy on the pitch. And then next person I'm going to guess you're going to talk about is James Maddison.
Yeah.
And he looked very happy on the pitch. He looked comfortable. He looked like he belonged that level. Smile on his face, as Paul Joyce referenced in his piece about him today, which is really good. It kind of was a moment where he hugged the goalkeeper, the opposition goalkeeper. It was like when someone just went, he was like, you know, he looked like he belonged to that level. Yeah. And I know it wasn't the most testing opposition that he would face, but there were some little moments, the little Cruyff in the second half where he kind of completely bamboozled the midfielder and his shot was over the bar.
I'll talk about Maddison in a sec, just to say on Saka.
Sorry.
Just final line on it. I'm not saying he should leave Arsenal, but they should pay him what he wants. Not ridiculous money. 350 a week is the bracket that I think he's going to be a front runner at Arsenal for years to come. So he deserves that. So it's all, you know, you're telling me stay at the club that loves you and with the manager that's improving you.
Stay at the club that allows you to play the best football you can play. That's an important point for a lot of young players.
Still a job, Tony.
Yeah.
Pay me what I'm worth. Show me the money. That's what I'm saying.
You'll get loads of money. Don't worry about that. Don't ever think. That's one thing I say to young players all the time. Don't think too much about money. People will be throwing money at you in football clubs.
Okay, all right, James Maddison. I think there's one football club that might be throwing a bit of money at him by the end of the summer. But as you mentioned, I think he looked great against Ukraine. What I found most interesting was I think he's a unique player in the England squad and he adds a different dimension. Hmm. And I'd always thought of him maybe playing in the middle in terms of the three central midfielders and maybe as a number 10, but to see him there just popping up kind of an inside left forward was quite interesting, actually. And he spoke afterwards about how Southgate kind of encourages him to do that and let him, because that's more of his natural game. He said, I'm not an out-and-out winger, I'm not Saka on the other side, I'm not going to hug the touchline, I'm not going to beat many players. But actually, that extra creative spark in that role, a little bit more space for Chilwell to overlap as well,
changes very well, obviously.
She exactly changes the point of attack for England in a way that I'm like, ooh, is James Maddison going to be a regular for England? Because it looks good.
Well, the thing is, like, clearly on this form, and we can only, I said this before, we can only take it ever as a, with England's, the quality of England's attacking options, you can only ever take it as a snapshot in time. And at this moment, Saka is nailed on.
Yeah.
So there's now one place for all this plethora of talent,
Rashford,
like Foden, Rashford, and Maddison included. Yeah. So it's going to be a moment in time. And Maddison, like, or people taking the chance when they're given it. And I think he certainly did himself no harm at all in that performance.
I felt England were kind of, I looked at this and went, oh, could we be a bit like Liverpool under Klopp? Could England have a side that's more about, you know, you mentioned the stability of the midfield three without a clear number 10, you know, like we go, oh, Mount or Foden has to be this creative player that gets in the box. We can have that stable three. We can allow the forwards, the front three, to go and do their thing, helped by the fullbacks, a bit like Liverpool at their pomp. I'm not going to say we're going to Geigen press and have that kind of rock and roll football. I'm not saying that. But where there's, you know, the solid core, if you like, is the centre halves and the three midfielders. That's the block. And everyone else are the ones that gets to attack.
It's a strange one because England were a little bit lopsided, as in, on the right side, Kyle Walker didn't really attempt to go past Saka at all. But on the left side, Chilwell was continually trying to get behind the fullback, overlap him.
Yeah.
But with that, James Maddon showed the intelligence to go inside. He reminded me a bit of what Griezmann's done for France, where he's played on the left side at times. I know Mbappe's had majorly that role, but sometimes they go with Mbappe down the middle and Griezmann comes inside and plays in that big circle where he twists and turns. Maddison was doing that. He wasn't hugging the touchline, didn't need to, because Chilwell was doing way more attacking down the left side. And I thought that's a big thing for Gareth to think about, because I'm not sure he'd get in front of Foden. I think Foden would be his best choice on the left side. But James Maddison's done himself no harm at all, because he come in and, like you said, big smile on his face, loved every minute. Now, will he be able to do that type of Griezmann role against the very elite? Because Ukraine were pretty defensive-minded and they were looking to try and suffocate England for large parts of the game. That's going to be the big challenge for Maddison. Can he do what Griezmann's done in a lot in his career in big games, change and get a goal or create a goal? Because that was a big success for France. The Griezmann role, it changed. And he played many positions, but his role changed within the team. And I sort of think of Maddison and think of Griezmann. Can he do that? But Griezmann done it at
the
very
top. One thing you can see without any doubt is he's got the personality to... Yeah. To not be overawed by this stage at all. He looked like he enjoyed being there and he wants to be there more.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's quickly talk about some of the other nations. I'll quickly mention Wales because I thought it was a very important point. Nathan Broadhead equaliser right at the death away against Croatia, 1-1 there. But Rob Page's side were hanging on at times, which I think made it, for a lot of the time, but I think it made it a very important point. It was one of those, wasn't it? If you don't take your chances, you might get stunned.
Wow.
That's exactly what happened to Croatia. Latvia next on Tuesday for Wales. So they have a great chance to make a really positive start to qualifying and life after Gareth Bale and a couple of others as well. I think it was just an important result for Wales not to start on a big negative.
That was the most surprising result of the weekend. I thought, good luck to them going to Croatia. You know, obviously a number of retirements within the Welsh squad. Got battered. And Gregor I could bring up one game I played. I played in Brighton away 1 year with Millwall and we won 1-0. And now I don't know how we won 1-0. And you would have been part of that sort of performance, Gregor. Fair play to Wales. One thing you can say, the character of the team stood out and took the goal when it came, and big challenges for Wales, but boy, you've got to make the most of it, because that Croatian team is streetwise, so savvy, so experienced. You've got a hell of a result.
And what counted against them at the World Cup counted against them in this game, which is they just don't put the ball in the back of the net enough, and they had the chances to do it.
Kramaric scored, but they haven't got the centre forward.
Kovacic, what a chance.
Yes.
What a chance. Yeah. A volley 6 yards out. He skied it. Would have been a beautiful goal as well. Great move, but there were loads of chances for Croatia.
They have really missed, more than any nation I can think, leading nation of having it. They've got to World Cup finals, and, you know, like we saw this year in Qatar, they can be a really difficult team to play against.
Yeah, great point for Wales. We'll see if they can back it up. They'll probably lose to Latvia now after that, but there you go.
<Don't say that. laughs>
Scotland 3, Cyprus 0. Couple of goals from midfield maestro Scott McTominay in this one. Huge game tonight against Spain. We'll be watching that closely as well. The Spanish beat Norway by 3-0 as well. I watched that game out in an Irish pub, Murphy's, I think it was, in Berlin. I enjoyed it very much. All the lads had a big bet on Scotland, so yeah, we all enjoyed it. But Yeah, it's the start you expected. Obviously, heavy favourites at home to Cyprus, but it's something to take into that game against Spain, which is a big one.
Yeah, I mean, well, look, it's expected. It's the first time we've started the Euros qualifying campaign with a win since 2006, and there were edgy moments in the second half, you know, until those the second and third goal came. So it was a kind of, although Scotland were always really in control, it wasn't put to bed. It was
a typical Scotland.
Yeah,
come
unfortunately,
on, mate.
and then, but the subs made a huge difference. Ryan Christie came on and he had a lot of energy. McTominay obviously got the goals. Lyndon Dykes played a big part in McTominay's finish at the back stick, and I think Dykes is going to have to lead the line because Che Adams is injured and that's him. Dykes did well, and then, he'll make it hard for any opposition. I've always said this. He's had a hand in a lot of goals, not often being the one who's finishing it, but he's had a hand in a lot of goals in a Scotland jersey, and he's a handful. And I think it might be that those three play. I think Ryan Christie off Dykes has been a kind of partnership that's worked well in the past. I think McTominay might come in perhaps in place of Jack, but it's going to be a big test. It's going to be a big test against Spain.
I would say it was kind of a flattering scoreline for Spain as well, so I'm kind of intrigued to see how Scotland do, because I watched that game and there were periods where you just couldn't believe the ball hadn't gone in the back of the net for Norway. They managed to give a lot of trouble to Spain, and Spain just hit them sucker punch, couple of goals off set pieces in two goals in 3 minutes in the second half, and that was it, game over. But Norway were in it for long, long periods, so again, intrigued to see what Scotland do tonight in front of their home crowd. Is that right? They're at home, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's going to be a good one. I think it's going to be a good one. Prediction?
I don't do predictions. Certainly not what Scotland are concerned.
I knew you'd say that, so I thought I'd put you on the spot. If you haven't seen the highlights, France destroyed the Netherlands. Some beautiful goals in this game. And I kind of went, I watched England games and went, we're as good as any nation right now. I felt so confident. And then I watched France's goals against the Netherlands and I was like, okay, all right, maybe there's a little bit of a gap, but they're still bloody good, aren't they? But yeah, I mean, Mbappe and Griezmann's finish for the first, and just, they were great. They were great. So check it out.
Ireland tonight.
Evan Ferguson.
Well,
Mbappe's been talking about how, you know, he's got... Listen, if Kylian Mbappe wants to talk up Evan Ferguson of the Republic of Ireland, the guy must be doing something right, and he must be going into this game on cloud nine with loads of confidence, you know.
Yeah. Well, they're improving, and I felt sorry for Stephen Kenny in some ways because he's had to take over a nation which has clearly been suffering, but there's some good things. Three Premier League goalkeepers now with the Republic of Ireland. You know, got Ferguson who's coming up front, and there's others to follow. So do I expect Ireland to get a result? No. But I think there'll be a bigger test than Holland were for France.
Think so?
Yeah.
Ireland will be a bigger test than the Netherlands. Tony Cascarino said it here first. Why is that?
Because the Netherlands have been lacking for me a hunger and desire for quite a long while. You know, watching them in the World Cup, I thought they were an also team. And the Dutch have had fantastic sides over the years. Watching them now in the modern game, yeah, loads of great players in many different positions, but I just don't think they've got the collective, which they've been accused in many times, by the way, but they've had far better teams than this one.
It's a big test against France. The very final thing I wanted to mention on the podcast, I don't know if you saw the pictures, Zlatan Ibrahimovic came onto the pitch in front of the fans in Sweden. Huge reception for him. He broke the record that has stood since 1983 of former Italy goalkeeper Dino Zoff to become the oldest player to figure in a European Championship qualification. I think he's 41 and a half, basically. And I just wanted to ask you two about your favourite golden oldies that you probably played with, maybe you played against, just an older player. Come on, Tony, it's probably you, isn't it?
Well, no, it's an easy question, but I then, you know, think about many different. A tier one that I, when I first came, encountered, and I thought, wow, and he was a great pro, great runner, was Brian Robson. Brian Robson was some athlete as a player. You know, and I know he's not the most gifted footballer you could think of, but boy, could he keep going. I was just thinking, as you were saying it, by the way, on Zlatan, has he got anything to prove?
Well,
and we started that earlier on about having to prove all the time.
beyond that, I think, yeah.
yeah, if you ask him, he's definitely going to say no. But
probably go Kenny Dalglish, really. Kenny.
Kenny.
Kenny. Oh, my hero.
Yeah.
what you're asking me?
You played with someone who's
Des Walker.
Des Walker.
Yeah, I mean, he was...
You got to play with Des Walker.
Yeah, he was twice my age.
I didn't answer that. I answered the players I played against.
Yeah, but you... No, it could have been either. We'll come back to someone you played with if you want
Des Walker, he came back to Nottingham Forest when I was, like... I was going to the first team about 19, so, and I think he was 37, so not far off twice my age. And just an unbelievable player to play alongside. I mean, like, he let you know if you did anything wrong. I remember writing a piece a while back saying that I mean, some fans might say of the clubs I played for that they might disagree with this, but I very rarely played anyone off onside because of Des Walker, because he always said to me, like, if I'm a left back and he was facing along the line, I always had to be on his shoulder, like, and he was always head resolved on a swivel. Just little nuggets of advice like that. He was brilliant with young players and, like, big character, obviously. Huge personality and huge legend for Nottingham Forest coming back, and he was involved in a playoff campaign as well when he returned. So he played on for another year or two, I think. So close to 40 odd.
I'd go for Terry Urlock, because if I got in trouble on the field, Terry'd look after me and help me out, and he was known as the wild man from Bormio. as a Millwall player, so Terry.
I remember him at Rangers. My
he was brilliant for Rangers, wasn't he? Graham Souness.
He was wild too, though.
Yeah. He was crazy, man.
Love it, gentlemen. Thank you very much. Been a pleasure as always. Gregor Robertson and Tony Cascarino. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you check out the game each and every Monday, as I say. Some great stuff on Spurs from Gary Jacob and also from Alison Rudd. You can read it on the Times app, so download that if you can. If not, get the game online, thetimes.co.uk/the game. We'll see you on Thursday. Plenty of international football between now and then, but also lots to look forward to this weekend. We'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.